Om Shanti, good morning. This morning we have the pleasure of meeting Sister Genty. Many of you have perhaps met her or seen her in different forums over time. Sister Genty can be described in many ways, but she is part of the global executive team of the Brahma Kumaris. In many ways, she's the public face, I think, of the Brahma Kumaris, representing the organisation at the United Nations and on the Conference of the Parties and Climate Change and Environment and many other forums. She's widely travelled. We used to say that she was based in UK, Europe, but these days she's much more a global citizen and spends her time split between India and travels around the globe. But we're particularly delighted that Sister Genty continues to be able to make time in her calendar to join us at Peace of Mind. And we'll enjoy this morning's class with her and also tomorrow morning's class. One little thing is today, we know that the classes in the mornings are a little bit, they last some time, yeah, an hour and a half. So it's a lot of sitting and absorbing information. So today we're going to try something a little bit different, and we'll get into the detail later. But after the main sort of class, if you like, from Sister Genty, we're then going to break and have a little bit of dialogue workshop and some question and answer, just to break up the flow a little bit. Thank you, Sister Genty.
Om Shanti. Good morning. We are coming towards the close of the retreat, and so far I think you've probably come to terms with the concept of soul and experimented with it and maybe experienced it. Who feels they've had a little bit of a glimpse of the soul? And those who can't decide whether to raise their hands or not, it's okay. Because just keep that practice going of being here, experiencing the light that you are, and doing all the things you need to do, but coming back to this again and again. It'll be a tremendous support for your journey. And the connection with the divine, my hope is that that topic also is something that you feel comfortable with. And maybe there are some who still don't believe in God, the source, the divine. It's okay. The practice of meditation, just simply with this awareness, is of tremendous benefit anyway. So continue and see where it takes you. And today we're going to take a little bit of a leap in a few ways. We are used to thinking about time starting here, finishing here. But maybe you've now gone beyond that awareness to the awareness of time in a circular way. Think about nature. Look at all the different plants and leaves. And is there a single straight line that you see anywhere? And not just here, but anywhere in the world, in nature. No straight lines at all. Maybe there's a little circle. Maybe there's a big circle. And when it's a very big circle, you're only able to see a part of it. And so maybe you think it's a straight line, but actually when you explore it, it's not. And so when you're thinking about a time frame of thousands of years, thousands, it's a huge, huge, huge circle. But it's the only way to describe the way life moves. Think about a seed and a tree. Which came first? Same thing. When did karma start? When did the cycle start? And how do you put into a graphic design the concept of eternity? No beginning, no end. And maybe you've experimented with the concept of eternity in your meditation. And if not today, carry on experimenting, and for sure you have an experience of eternity. No beginning and no end, and you end up with a cycle. The soul is eternal. God is eternal. But also, this world, matter, is eternal. Yes, it goes through many phases, many changes, but definitely we haven't yet been able to find the origins of life, or even the origins of the planet, the element. There's a laboratory in Switzerland, CERN, and they must have spent billions and billions and billions of euros trying to find the origin of life and the origin of the world. They're still trying. It's okay. But your personal experiment of meditation will give you a feeling of being above all limits and beyond the constraints of time that we've imposed. The birds and the bees move with the rhythm according to the sunlight. We've stopped doing that a long time ago, and we've created our own system. And usually it's a straight line, but in fact there's no straight lines in nature, a circle. And so when was the first karma and the result of that first karma? We can say that within a cycle, okay, let's start here. But when we go round and we come round to the end of that, where do you go? You don't escape, but you go on to the next cycle again. And so it's a very different concept to the one we're used to. But it seems to make sense. Take it as a story, if you wish. A fairy tale, if you want. But think about it, reflect on it. And so let's start at a point when the soul didn't have a body. The soul was in that space of silence, of eternity, where there's only a world of light, no bodies, no movement, no motion, just total stillness, purity, and silence. And there's a thought that enters the soul. I wonder what it's like to experience life down there, this human stage, this human world. And that thought brings the soul down into the human dimension. But when it first comes down, the world is pure, the soul is pure. The purity of the soul is actually connected very much with the purity of matter. But it's the soul that determines the state of purity, because the soul has consciousness and matter doesn't. And so when the pure soul comes into the cycle and takes on a physical form, even the elements are pure. And that's the start of the new cycle, is the time when it's the day, there's sunlight, there's beauty, there's truth. It can be called the age of truth. You could even call it the golden age of humanity. But the soul is like a battery. You've had that analogy before, I'm sure. And with every thought, every action, there's a change in the level of energy. Very, very imperceptible at the beginning, but a change nonetheless. And so a quarter of the way through the cycle, the soul has lost not a quarter of its power, but just maybe 20%, maybe even less. And so that purity is still there, that highest consciousness is there, and the relationship with matter is one of harmony, because souls are pure, they have purity inside. In here means everything is in tune. My thoughts, my feelings, my words, my actions, everything is in harmony. Nothing in conflict inside. And so relationships, the same. We don't even need to speak a great deal. We can understand each other's thoughts. Today, I don't want you to understand what's going on in my mind. And probably you don't want me to know what's going on in yours. And there's a discrepancy between my thoughts and my behavior, and even between my conscience and my behavior. So there's quite a bit of turmoil, which creates a lot of stress. Stress from outside is one thing, but when there's conflict in here, that's the biggest stress of all. So a total contrast to today's world, but that world of the Golden Age, where the soul occupies matter, is engaged with matter, but the soul is so powerful that matter isn't influencing the soul. Soul is influencing matter. And so there's a relationship again of total harmony with each other, with the animal kingdom, with the plant kingdom, with the elements. And so it's a world which sometimes has been described as paradise, utopia, the land of truth, the dream time, different names in different cultures. But if it's a myth, it somehow has persisted through all the centuries and millennia. And it's a very powerful myth that there was a time when there was total happiness. And so can I even think of it as a dream? But the power of the soul gradually diminishes, and it comes to the point where it's no longer full capacity. And there's a little bit of a change, barely noticeable, still the world of paradise, still the world of harmony, but some of that truth has just faded. It hasn't disappeared, it's just faded a little bit. And so where we use the analogy of gold, now we would use the analogy of silver. And so the Golden Age, wind, rain, sun, doesn't impact gold. The gold stays as it is. Silver is a bit of a tarnish and then needs a quick rub and it's sparkling again. But there's a change. Maybe there isn't that total communication of understanding. Maybe a little bit of a gap, maybe a time gap. Takes me a bit more time to understand you and you to understand me. And so we've moved into a different period, but still beautiful, harmonious, and still paradise. But by the time we reach halfway through the cycle, we've lost by then half our power. And that's a critical time, because our consciousness flips. Where it was totally the awareness of spirit, now it becomes the consciousness of matter, of the physical. Where we've got legends on a universal scale of a world of paradise, we've also got legends that speak about the exile from paradise. When there's a story that persists, there must be some truth in it. Maybe there's a lot of embroidery around it, but the thread must be something that's real. And so there's a story of Pandora's box. There's a story of Adam and Eve, different stories. But they all describe that state where there's a fall from grace. We move from that experience of sacredness, sanctity, beauty, truth to another era. And now the body has taken over. And think about all the things that Pandora's box did when it was opened. All the bugs came out, ill health, the feeling of lack, the loss of so much, death coming in a way which is very different to the way it was in the Golden and Silver Age. Golden and Silver Age, the word death doesn't exist because it's a very sweet transition when this chariot, this vehicle, is a little bit old. It's time to say goodbye, and the soul moves from one body in a very smooth transition to a mother's womb, and the people here wave goodbye with love, knowing it's time for the soul to go. The soul goes with love, no strings or bondages of attachment. It enters a fetus and it begins with a fresh new costume, a beautiful new vehicle that's much more comfortable. And so, new relatives, new faces, but all of it filled with joy and love. Now Pandora's box and death has come on the scene. And there's fear, there's darkness, there's insecurity. But this is because there are five major evils that have appeared that had no place in the Golden and Silver Ages. It's the time for lust and anger and greed and attachment and the big one, ego. And they begin very little. And so life is still fairly comfortable and the soul is quite happy. But as time goes on, we get messengers, we get prophets who come and try and teach us the path of truth, the path of nobility, the path of love. Different messages from different prophets, but all very true. And they help to a certain extent, but they're not able to reverse the process. The process of decline continues. Nobody's able to explain how to recharge the soul and bring it back to its original state of purity. And so from this period, the third period, which we call the Copper Age, if you've seen copper, when it's got rusty, it changes color. And it's dangerous. You touch it and it's scary. You don't want to touch it. So the soul's now in a very different space. There's love, but it's now become attachment and possessiveness. There's definitely no peace anymore. The purity the soul had has disappeared. And so the conflict inside is beginning. We've moved away from our original qualities, and our original values. And the prophets aren't able to turn the tide. And now we're into the era of recorded history. And it's an era of suffering, of pain, of disease, war, strife, all of these things. And the causes, not lack of anything, there's enough for all. But the causes, the greed, the ego, the desires. And so although we then have the teachings, and we say this is good, this is true, this is helpful, but we don't have the power to follow those teachings in our life. We'll say that, yes, it's good to be noble, it's good to be pure, it's good to be this, that, and the other, but we don't have the capacity to do it. And so the decline continues. And so from the Copper Age we reach the Iron Age. And guess which part of the cycle we're in now? Any guesses? No surprise if I say you're in the Dark Age, the Iron Age. And iron gets rusty and it's poisonous. I don't want to give sorrow, but somehow there's misunderstandings, there's lack of integrity, there's ulterior motives, and all this is part of the mix that then creates the sorrow and pain, both for the giver and the receiver. Because when I'm angry, I'm not just giving you sorrow, I'm hurting myself and I don't like it, but I can't do anything about it. And so at that point when everything is in a state of collapse, because civilization is actually based on values. Look at history. Every civilization that collapsed is because they moved away from their truth, their values. Corruption came in, deception came in, falsehood ruled, and the civilization collapsed. And so, if we want to create a better world, build a better world again, you can't do it by technology or with robots. It has to be with values. The values that are the original qualities of the soul, that the soul carries within itself. And so those values are the values that we're touching into when we meditate, coming back to our own original state. And as that change happens within the soul, and we have the power, and I'll explain that in a minute, then we're able to create a better world, not just a better world, but when the soul comes to its state of total purity, we come back to the Golden Age, and the cycle begins. So this is a time when we can recharge our batteries. But in order to do this, we need clarity. Totally clear information about what the soul is, who God is, where our home is, and the story of the cycle. And I've now been with the Brahma Kumaris for 50 plus years. But I've known the Brahma Kumaris for most of my life because my mother and grandmother were connected. So I got exposed to these ideas and I challenged them in my teens, but I came back to them also in my teens. And in those years, I've had the opportunity of finding out a little bit more about all the different branches of the tree of humanity, the different traditions, the different teachings, not in detail, but to a certain extent. And I haven't heard clear explanation of these subjects anywhere. So where are we getting all this from? The man whose picture you see everywhere, Brahma Baba, I see him as my grandfather, and I had the amazing fortune of actually being with him through my childhood first, and then my teenage years, and then when I studied these teachings properly, then for that last year of his life, I was able to know him on a very different level through the teachings. So these teachings have come to us through him. But these are not things that he had known. He had not known any of this. They came to him through visions. And then, after the visions, a voice that was speaking through him. And now I'm asking you to take another leap. That here's a man, but the divine speaks through him so that we can have clear information and we can once again connect and be able to come back to our original state of peace, of purity, of power, of love, of truth, of joy. It's only through that connection that we can prepare ourselves for that period of the Golden Age. But the beautiful thing is that this is that transition period right now. The end of the old and the beginning of the new. And it happens, the transition can happen because of that extra influx of energy. Otherwise entropy, and there's a loss. And then to get back to that original state of power, it needs extra energy from outside. Human energy isn't able to transform. Human intellects that are at this moment highly polluted to a state of divinity, which was the state of the intellect at the beginning of the cycle. And so that entry of the divine into the human story to explain all of this is the way in which we listen, we try and understand, we experiment and see what works for us and how it fits. And according to our own understanding, practice those teachings, and we see the results in our own life. And then we want to understand more. So it's a gradual process of transformation, but not gradual in the sense of 1,000 years. Gradual just in the sense of one lifetime. But yes, what I knew when I was 19 to what I know today, it's a huge transformation. The realization of what we understand and the experience brings about change within the soul. And change becomes very natural and easy, not hard or a struggle or a battle. But you're coming back to your own original state of being, but with the power of the divine, the insights and the love. I've summarized about 3 different lessons into just about over 30 minutes, so it's a lot to digest. I'm totally aware of that. But it would be a shame to leave Abu without having an understanding of the cycle and why things are happening in the world the way they are, but also what we can do about it, but also the source of this information. And as I say, it could be a fairy story for you. For me, it's very much a reality. But I leave it with you. And Judy is going to tell us what next.
Thank you, Janti Ben. That was exceptionally clear. Wow, thank you. And we just told her 20 minutes ago that that would be what she was doing. So imagine, quite a lovely intellect. We've been thinking about the time to digest and integrate some of these concepts, stories, ideas that you've been hearing here. So I'd like to take just a 5-minute pause, and I'm going to ask you to get out those beautiful journals. Hopefully you have some pages left in your journal. Do you? Yes? Okay. So journals out, please. And do you know what free writing is? Do you know what free writing is, or automatic writing? Where for a certain number of minutes, 4 minutes in this case, you just put your pen on the paper and you begin writing. And you don't stop, you don't criticize, you don't edit. You just write. Free flow. It's kind of like a flow of consciousness onto the paper. Everyone have pen and paper? But you'll get a question. So the question I'm asking you now, thank you, okay, yeah, go ahead. We've heard a lot about this, you see that? Karma, okay, and this session is about karma plus drama, you see that? So the question to you is, karma plus drama equals question mark. Karma, your own individual actions and their consequences, plus drama, the story Sister Janti just told us, those two things together equal what? Oh, big question, no? Big question. So, if I can invite you, just some gentle music. We have 5 minutes for you just to write. Just write your own thoughts. No conversation with anyone. This is you, maybe conversation with God, but just you, your pen, your paper, your own intuition, your own wisdom, your own thoughts, and just digest, please. Karma plus drama equals what? Okay, begin. Om Shanti. How is your writing going? Is it good to be making your own sense of these things? It's important, right? Because you're taking yourself with you. So we'd like to just give you a few minutes to talk to the person next to you. Just share anything of your thoughts so far of how these two go together. So we'll just take 5 minutes or so. Not a long time, but turn to someone nearby with the same language and just share your reflections. How do these go together, karma and drama? Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. So is that nice to share? And you're hearing similar things, interesting things? Yeah. Maybe we could hear 3 examples if you could give it in 5 words. So like a slogan, like an equation. Karma plus drama equals what? 5 words. If we have 3 people who could only give us 5 words, Frank has the mic. So it's like a summary from your small group conversation. In 5 words, Ravi here at the front. Frank, right there, Ravi Baihas.
Karma plus drama is equal to liberation from the cycle of death and taking birth. Yeah, moksha or mukti.
Thank you. So, karma plus drama equals liberation from the cycle of birth and rebirth. It's about 5 words. Thank you, Ravi. Over. Okay, go ahead.
I just have 1 word for that came to me straight away. So karma plus drama equals Leela, which is the play that Leela. We're all participating in as actors.
Lovely. Leela, the cosmic play. Thank you. Hong Kong brother.
One word, karma plus drama equals to fortune.
Fortune.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, 2 more. If you've got 5 words... Oh, now we have so many. Okay, Bante, would you like to answer? Bante, right here.
Karma plus drama equals nirvana.
Nirvana. Very, very Buddhist answer, yes? Thank you for that. Okay, and 1 more. Thank you, Bante.
Karma plus drama equals dharma.
Dharma. Dharma. Lovely way of living. Okay, and we had 1 more very keen. She's come all the way down. Frank, behind you. Okay.
It's plus an extra word as well, so excuse me. So karma plus drama is potential for elevated creations of divine order.
Oh, the potential for elevated creation of divine order. Wow, I think we'll stop there. That was pretty good, don't you think? We'll stop there. Okay, thank you. So, I'm going to give an opportunity to Sister Janti, who has thought about this for 50 plus years. What does karma plus drama equal? And she will offer us her insights into this question. If you do have a question, write it down short and sweet on a piece of paper and give it to Brother Frank, and he will bring it on stage. But I think she will answer most of your questions. So listen first, okay? All right. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. The responses all of you gave were really lovely. And for me, drama and karma are interchangeable, because drama and karma together is life. Soul taking a body is life, and as soon as a soul has taken a body, then all the things it's doing on the world drama stage, that is life. And so everything is karma and drama. When it's the golden age, it didn't happen just by chance. It happened through our karma, which is beautiful. And yes, now is the opportunity to actually follow the path of dharma, the path of righteousness, to be able to establish that golden age. So yes, it is fortune. And yes, it's also the time when we are beginning to restore order to the world, divine order. So all of those ideas that you shared were very much part of my understanding. But the problem arises when we look at the Dark Age, the Iron Age. In Hindi, it's called Kaliyug. And the word Kal means death. It means time. And it means the machine. Does it make sense? The age of the machine, the age of death, the age when time, instead of just being time, has become bondage. And so, who created Kali Yuga? We, with God's help, create Satyug, the age of truth, the golden age. But who creates Kali Yuga, the iron age? Any guesses? We create Satyug, the golden age, but equally, we create the iron age. Our karma changes the drama, and so yes, the karma we did at some point, and I would say at this point of transition, that creates the golden age. And we then don't think about doing good karma because everybody's enjoying that period in time. Everything is good karma, except that it's not really bringing a result in the sense that good karma is when you're bringing yourself back to your original pure state with the power of God's love, but you're also helping other souls to come back to their own pure state. And so that in a very simple definition, because many things we can do. You can cook and through that bring somebody closer to God, or you can cook and bring them closer to you, or you can cook and take them further away from you. So what is the quality of karma? It's the intention behind the karma that determines the quality of karma. Same action, but the intention determines its quality. And so our quality of karma today can truly, truly help me come back to God, come back to my original state of purity, but also help others come closer to God and come closer to their state of purity. And then, in the golden age, we are pure, we don't need to do good karma. So everything is beautiful, everything is royal, noble, elevated, but we're actually drawing from our account of good karma from the previous cycle. And when that runs out, and we're in the copper age, then we start toiling. The Bible puts it very well, that there's a time when you're receiving the fruits of the earth naturally, automatically. The earth has compassion, the earth has generosity, the earth is giving. And then, when you've eaten from the tree of knowledge, and there's the fall, which is strange, knowledge is a good thing. So eating from the tree of knowledge would be very good, except that it's the tree of the knowledge of the dark side of the soul. It's the tree of the knowledge of the vices. So it's the tree of the knowledge of the material things rather than the elevated things. And so our karma from that moment on is really a mixture. Everything is tainted with something that's connected with the physical in the sense of I want more, or I have anger, or I have attachment, maybe not more for myself, but more for those who I feel connected with, which is usually a smaller group. I'm not connected with everyone. In the golden age, it's one family, a connection in which everybody is part of my family. And so there's no need for generosity even, because there's abundance. Everything is there available for all. Now I want for me and mine. And so the problems begin. And they increase, increase, increase until the end of the Iron Age. We try and do good karma, but we don't really know ourselves. And so to do altruistic good karma is next to impossible. We don't really know God. So we don't have the power to be able to free ourselves from our own desires and say that, yes, this is something which is for others. So we sometimes call it good karma, but then we want to see our name on the board, or we want to have recognition of some type or another, or even worse, I've given, so I need to see a return in some form or another. And so I might think I'm doing good karma, but because the seed is the seed of self-interest, it's not really pure good karma. Hence the slide downwards and the decay coming in and the corruption and the breakdown. And so karma has determined the story of the drama. And so now at this moment, once I have the fortune of knowing myself and knowing the divine, I have to do two things simultaneously. I have to find a way to settle my karma from the past, not just one birth, but several births. And I don't even know what I've done, except that I'm feeling the pain. And the story of karma is that good karma will bring happiness. Karma that's not so good is going to bring pain. So I can deduce that there's been a lot of things that are not quite right. But also, I can see the effect that karma that's not good has had on the soul. Where did I get this habit of anger? And even a child is born with anger. Nurses will tell you that even when the face of the baby hasn't properly settled, they all look the same. Crumpled prunes. They need a wristband to be able to distinguish which child is which. But the characteristics of the child are unique. The nurses will tell you within 12 hours, this is the crying baby, this is the smiling baby, this is the uncomfortable baby, this is the angry baby. So we come with those qualities because of all the karma of the past births. And so we don't come innocent. There is an innocence in the Golden Age, but by the time it's the Iron Age, we come with a heap of trouble. And you know that a child of 3 can have trauma, maybe even younger, but children of 4 and 5 need psychological help today, reality. So we need to settle all that karma of the past, clear it up so that it doesn't impact my life anymore. And then I need to change the quality of my karma so that I'm not adding to my burden, but I'm not just settling, but I'm also doing good karma that I can carry with me into the Golden Age. So together we can create the Golden Age again with help from above. But it's our karma that creates the Golden Age. And it's our karma that creates the Iron Age. And the way to settle karma, one is through suffering, which is what's happening generally. But the problem with suffering is that, give you a simple example. I get sick, and on one level it's a settling of karma. But on another level, I get angry about it, I get upset about it, I complain, why me, and I tell off the people who are trying to help me. I'm adding to my karma. And yet I've seen people who are settling karma through illness, but it's not a burden for them or a burden for others who are caring for them. There are some people who we've never been able to find carers for because they're so crotchety and complaining and moaning and groaning. And there are some people who have a list of people who want to care for them because they feel it's their fortune to care. You can see how situations are the same, but the response of the human being is very unique, very different. And so, yes, we've created the situation, but if I choose to go a different way, if I choose to use meditation as a way for settling karma, I can do that. And that will happen through not just meditation on and off, once a week, once a month, and not even just every day. And it's not a question of time, it's a question of quality. If I can have a real connection with the divine, in which I'm feeling the power of God's love, the soul is being cleansed through that love. The power of God's love can help me settle all the karma of the past. And that's the offer. So meditation isn't relaxation. Yes, it does relax you. Meditation isn't just concentration. Yes, it does help that. But meditation, or let me use the word Raj Yoga. Raja, the highest, the supreme, the sovereign, the master. So when I meditate, and I'm meditating on God, not on a word, not on an image, not on nature, but meditation on God and the connection with God, that fire of love is a fire of purification in which the soul settles all its karma. And at the same time, it's receiving the power to do good karma all the time. Because whatever I do can be good karma. Whether it's typing, whether it's cooking, whether it's singing, whether it's dancing. Whatever I do, if I do it in that spirit of love, it's good karma. So I hope that ties up some of the questions that you might have had. I know there's a few that I haven't answered. Well, there was one question that I haven't answered. But let me see if it comes up again. Okay?
A very nice variety of questions, gentlemen. So let's start with this one, which is about when does the soul enter the body?
When a mother feels the quickening in her tummy, that's when the soul has entered the fetus. And until then, the fetus is being created, generated, but it doesn't actually have the life force in it. And then the mother can feel. Then it's the baby kicking. Then that's the time the soul has entered. So the soul announces its arrival.
Who is keeping accounts of the karma?
Automatic. God doesn't need to keep the accounts, and there's no way that I can keep it. We are living in a world of automation, and so that's automatic.
When a new golden age begins, will nothing have changed since the previous beginning 5,000 years ago?
It's a tricky one to get your head around. But when I experience the eternity of the soul, I also understand the eternity of my part that's recorded within the soul. And so at any given moment, that same part that's recorded emerges. And so yes, the cycle repeats automatically. But I would suggest that you don't get stuck with that. Wait for the experience of your own eternity and the eternal recording so that it becomes a bit clearer. It's not something I can prove to you. It's not something that we can reason out, but it is what it is. What's most important is to know that this is now the transition period, and this is the time when I have all the tools to help me create my fortune and to create the golden age.
Do we have to name things from the past that we remember as we give forgiveness, or do we simply meditate? So do we have to identify them, or can we just meditate?
The mantra that we've been given is forget the past and move forward. If you keep thinking of the past, you're going to hold on to it. So even something that happens this morning, if it's beneficial, benevolent, keep it in your heart. But if it's something that's not very nice, come to terms with it, and there's a process, and forgive and forget and move on. So I certainly don't want to remember incidents from the past births. The gift of death is that we forget the past birth. But sometimes when there's been, and it's usually when it's been under violent circumstances, then the memory of that is so strong, the trauma of that is so strong, that when the child takes birth, it has vivid recollections. And in the West, when the child speaks of these things, they usually get told, oh, that was a bad dream, forget it. In India, they take it more seriously. And there's a man called Professor Ian Stevenson from the US who studied many, many, many stories from children about their past births and set out to validate them. And he did. He was able to get concrete evidence of the past birth and the child who's had that recollection and that memory. But it was always in very traumatic, violent circumstances, not the usual. And so the gift of death under normal circumstances, where it's a natural death, is one in which we leave behind the past, but of course we carry the karmic account of that with the soul. But we also carry the elements of personality that are related to the past.
These gentlemen, we have two that are sort of related. So first one is, how do I remain in a soul conscious level in my actions? My experience is that as soon as I think of being soul conscious, I realize that my ego has taken over and I am being body conscious. Smile. How to be in the flow and stay there? And a sort of related one is, how do you remain sensitive to and aware of the divine in your daily life?
How many of you ever met Daddy Janki? Anyone? Oh, a good few. Daddy used to say, don't ask me how long I spend in remembrance. Ask me how long I don't spend in remembrance. So the Dadis are senior sisters who It's an amazing story, and I won't share the detail of that with you now, but the story of the establishment of the Brahma Kumaris and these young women, and a few young men, but especially young women who surrendered their lives to God, age 12, age 14, age 19, the majority of them were all young, and the older ones were just in their 20s and 30s. So the story of all the dadis is they would have remembrance in a natural way, and you could feel the power of that. And so I think it's a question of practice, practice, and more practice. So when you practice, then you're able to keep your awareness here as you speak, as you do physical things that don't need focus. When you need to focus and concentrate on something, before you start, remembrance, and when you finish, remembrance. But in that space of the actual doing, I think it might be a challenge because the intellect is occupied. But where it's a lot of the time of our life, a day, is doing things that don't need total focus or concentration in that way.
So another two that are sort of related. The cycle of golden age, can it be described as the next octave? As we are now entering the higher octave through collective consciousness. And the other, how will the destruction happen? What do you think?
In the golden age, we are at our peak, but just through living life, that energy level goes down, and we don't need God. It's not a godless society, because it's very much following the spiritual laws of the universe, but there's no need for prayer or meditation, because there's a state of total purity. Prayer, meditation, and all the rituals of life, they begin from the copper age. Golden age, you don't need them. You're already at your peak. And rather than the word destruction, destruction sort of implies an end, finish, nothing. But the transition from the golden age to the Iron Age is natural, and similarly from the Iron Age to the Golden Age, it's also a natural transition, except that there's a lot that's going on. Natural disasters, wars, and souls go home to that land of silence, that land of peace, and then come down here according to the level of purity. So the golden age, the highest level of purity, minimum population. The once souls come down, they take birth and rebirth. An iron age, minimum purity and maximum population. And so it's a transition. But it's a transition in which souls are freed from suffering. How do you sort out the mess that the world is in today until you say, okay, let's take a pause, let's finish everything and start again. So that's what's happening at the end of the Iron Age. Souls going home, but while we are here, before we go home, the preparation for the Golden Age. But not everyone's interested in the Golden Age. Some are quite happy and content, though surprising it may be. There are people who are happy and content and want nothing more than what the Iron Age offers. It's fine, it's okay. Those who feel there can be a better me, a better world, they're making the effort. So for them, there's the golden age. I can imagine there's more questions coming in your minds.
So
what I think is, if you just grasp the concept, the cycle, and secondly, the transition period, and what I need to do today. If you want, forget the rest, it's okay. But you'll be able to get more clarification at your own centers, and definitely there are answers to all the questions.
One last, okay, to do with karma. So, two related questions. There's a saying that when you do a bad karma and you haven't undone it in this life, that it will be passed down to your loved ones or next of kin, for example. How true might this be? And the other one is, when I see somebody is settling their karma, how can I remain detached instead of becoming dragged into their experience? Thank you.
Karma is very specifically my karma, so it's not that my children will take on my karma, but the fact that I'm related to them so closely, I'm already engaging in karma with all of them. And so then the wider impact of my karma is being felt by them also. But they're part of that too. They wouldn't be my children otherwise. And so the intricacy of karma is incredible. Why did I take birth here? Why did I take birth to these people? Etc., etc. So the threads of karma are extremely complex. But generally, my karma is my karma. So if it's coming to me, say, in the form of illness, I'm the one who's suffering. But those around me may also be suffering because of my illness in different ways. There's a backlash. So interconnectedness is the story. And yes, there can be an impact, but not in a direct way. Yeah. And mostly, when I see somebody else suffering, I suffer. That's the human state. And what I have to learn is, instead of just simply crying with them because they're in pain, can I do something to help them deal with the pain? Which means I mustn't get emotionally trapped. I have to stay, now this is a very difficult word, detached. It's difficult because the basic concept of being detached is just to be here and detached from my own skin. It's not about detachment from you, but it is about being able to not be impacted by your pain, but to find a way in which I can try and help you. So that instead of sitting crying with you, I wipe away your tears and help you learn to smile. We could go on and on and on, but maybe enough to digest for now. Om Shanti. Thank you for your questions.
Wow. Thank you. What do you think? Useful? Did it bring things together for you? Quite a bit, no, but it also raises so many more questions, which is why this is a lifelong learning, the Brahma Kumaris. We continue to learn more.